You are listening to Blue Mountain Radio, KQBM LP 103.7 FM West Point, KQBM 90.7 FM San Andreas.
Oh, yes! Yes! I'll have what she's having.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Welcome to Every Woman's Hour. On a Wednesday in late spring when it's actually raining a little bit, which is very kind and kind of sweet, because it's the end of what will be have been a wonderful rainy season with wildflowers all over the Motherlode. And you are listening to In the Motherlode, Women Who Make a Difference. Today we have on the air Daniela Kimura. Daniela was introduced to me by Monica Rose at Manzanita Arts and Manzanita Press in Angels Camp. And this interview was conducted in Angels Camp and is a rich variety of ways that a woman, Daniela, has lived her life being creative and making her living as a creative person and teaching others to do the same. So listen up to this great interview. I enjoyed every minute. Welcome, Daniela Kimura. We are here at Manzanita Arts and Writers Press in Angels Camp. And this is not the first time we've been here, as those of you know who listen often to Every Woman's Hour. We come at least once a month to meet an artist or a writer from Calaveras, because in my experience of up there and upcountry, I wind up getting pretty parochial about putting in all of the wonderful women who I meet who are close enough to come over to my home. Here, I've made a home away from home in Monica's office in the back of Manzanita Arts Emporium. And we also often include people from Tuolumne County and have today with us Daniela Kimura, who has been invited by Monica here at Manzanita Press because of the variety of ways that she makes a difference in the Motherlode with her writing, her workshops, and her media work. So Monica, tell us, first of all, we have not updated for some time. Tell us some things that are happening right now for Manzanita Press, especially since we are working with writing today.
Well, exciting things, and thank you for having me on your show again, Kat. I really appreciate that. We were really buzzing with events. Our anthology is coming into the fore here. We're getting it organized.
This anthology is on Beautifire.
This is the Beautifire. It's called Out of the Fire. And we're still asking for people to submit their stories and submit their photography and submit their art by going to the website, manzapress.com, and using the submission form and sending in your stories, because we are going to have our ongoing web presence, and what we're going to do is have pages on the web, linked to our website. We're going to have an ebook, an e-zine, and it's really going to be an ongoing historical record. So we really want people to encourage them to continue to send us material. We may have enough then for a volume two, you know, after we're finished with volume one, which is coming out June 17. That's our big launch. This summer, it will be at the Angels Camp Museum, the Carriage House, and we have a very exciting guest who will be there, and that is Dana Goya, who's a California poet laureate. He will be there on the last leg of his journey, in which he wants to visit all of the counties of California and give a poetry talk and a poetry inspiration. So we're excited to have him come. And then we'll have also photographers there. People can talk to artists who are involved and writers who are involved in the anthology. They will also be reading from the work, the writers will, from the book.
Now, if that sounds overwhelming to all of you who may be listening for the first time to an interview with Manzanita Press and Arts Emporium, it is overwhelming. I just thought that I might add that because one of the things that constantly impresses me about this particular building is that it houses hundreds of ways and possibilities for expressing yourself through the arts. And that's, let's segue right from that into introduce us, please, to Danella. Why did you ask her to come today?
Well, Danella, I've known Danella for many years, and I've seen the work that she's done, and I've read her books and saw her progress into her work. And I think with this newest book of collection of poems that she's put out, I think it's a remarkable collection and wisdom in her work. And it took me back to my own childhood as well. And Danella's been involved with our center for a long time and with our writers. We've always networked with mm-hmm. Tuolumne writers since, I think, day one. When I first came up to this area, I've always mm-hmm. had a Tuolumne connection because we're really not separated by boundary lines. We're together in, you know, the spirit of what we're doing and the love of poetry. So
yeah.
So I've really, really enjoyed her work over the years, and
as I have enjoyed Monica's.
Okay, and you know, I think that you're right about that. That many of us have a hard time drawing these boundaries, and I said that to one of the elders in our area at one point, to Coco down in San Andreas, who has I think it's called the treasure box or the treasure chest, antiques, and has been there for years. And she said, well, we're not actually separated, you know, by boundaries. We're separated by, our boundaries are rivers, which are not really boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that that's it. She's right. It's never cut and dried. And you can put your foot on one side into Calaveras, the other side into Amador, for example, unless you're a huge giant, because mm-hmm. you'll have to go over a river. So
our towns are about 10 miles apart because the train would have to stop and take on water.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in 10-mile increments, all of us.
Okay.
You know, really, in a web. Yeah. In a web of, you know, mother lode.
That's also beautifully put.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we are from Tuolumne County meeting with us today, Danella. And Danella Kimura, one of the first things that has impressed me about you is that you are... It seems to me, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're wearing many, many hats, and you seem to be well organized and focused around them. This is your life's work that we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. Well, the two hats that I've had the longest have been the writer's hat and the teaching hat. And I have taught in the public schools, in private schools. I've taught workshops and a lot of for adults and young people. I've taught in adult schools. So one feeds the other. I get with a group of kids and we're writing dramas. If I teach kids a workshop on poetry, then we're eating watermelon and everybody writes a watermelon poem. And so, so as I say, I teach a lot, and I also have done a lot of writing over the years, done a lot of events too. So yes, thank you.
Okay, well let's get into some of those. What was your background before you reached us today? Where have you been in these decades?
Well, presently I live in Tuolumne County. Lived in Benicia when my husband retired.
Benicia.
Yeah, it's a lovely town, kind of like Sonora in a lot of ways, or Columbia. And I loved teaching in Benicia. I started a poetry reading there because they didn't have one. Everywhere I'd gone before, there was always a bunch of poetry reading events. When I lived in Roseville, the downtown Sacramento group was just alive and well. They were putting out chapbooks. They were producing free tabloid papers of poetry, and it was just a live community. In Marin County before that, again, in 1986, when I first started reading poetry to audiences, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I'd read poetry all over that area, and then all of them came together in a writers' conference, and I brought them to the conference, and somebody named Young took it up and said, "Well, I really like your poems. You know, I'd like to produce this." And so he did, but he said, "First, go out and self-publish." And he said, "Tell me who you're after, you know, see him the next year. Tell me who your buyers are. Who's going to buy your books?" And I found out that the buyers are writers, poets, teachers, family. Those are the people that really enjoyed reading poetry. And they were story poems, so they were fun. You know, they were meant to be read dramatically, and I had developed them through oral presentation through poetry readings.
So for decades now, you've been both teaching during the day and then doing evening work, it sounds like to me, where you continue to pursue your creativity.
Yeah, a lot of years I did substituting. That's not a fun job to do.
No,
but
it's not.
I was always prepared with something fun for the kids. And one of the things was to bring a poem along and challenge them, if there was time, that they might want to write one of their own. And so I would present the poem, and we'd all have fun. Usually, if it's around St. Patrick's Day, I'd bring out the Blarney Stone or mm-hmm. something like that, something mm-hmm. that's seasonal, and get the kids a chance to, you know, think poetically for a minute.
So creative work day and night.
Yeah. I didn't have a really long-term teaching job all the time, because which is why the substituting, because you do so much of it and you get into the teaching, and then you lose the writing for a while. And then you get into the writing, you lose the teaching for a while. So it's kind of an ebb and flow of activity.
And how did you wind up then coming up here? How did this lead to you being a mountain woman?
Well, I always loved the mountains. And every time that my husband and I would come up to the little camp up here over in Silver Spur in Tuolumne, we would come back through Sonora and we'd say, "I want to retire here." Mm-hmm. And Tom, and we'd, every time, it was about over the years that he worked, maybe 5-6 times we'd just coming up here, and the same response every time, "I want to retire here." So in 2005, I had just gotten my master's degree at San Francisco State. I started it in 2008, my master's degree. And met my husband and didn't finish it.
1998.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
So start 1998. I met 1968. Let's get our dates
okay.
right. Sorry. In 1968, I met my husband, and we married in 1969. And I was halfway through the master's degree program. And I always wanted to finish it. And I kept saying, I want to finish my master's degree someday. And I had a friend who would say, no, you don't want to do that. Well, she had gotten hers right after college, so she didn't care whether I did or not. And I said, heard this kind of voice in my head that said, if you're going to get your master's degree, you've got to do it now. And I had gone to a lot of writers' conferences, took maybe 15 years of workshops and writing, and I felt like I'd learned all I can learn from that moment. I wanted to go to the next step. Going back to college and majoring in English and graduating in 2005, it took me to that next step of writing. I was much more mature, much more sophisticated, and it made me a better writer. So I was glad I did that. The day after I graduated, Tom says, "Well, I'm going to retire."
Okay.
And guess where? We came up to Tuolumne County and took 3 trips across the county to find out where we wanted to live. Ended up in Columbia because I could teach.
Perfect place.
Yeah. And Columbia College was like very close. So we, the idea was to teach at Columbia College, but that didn't happen. That's okay. I got to a point where I was going to, I wanted to do something with teaching as well as writing, but teaching. And I,
where were you going?
I was going somewhere. Oh, yeah, I wanted to do something with teaching. And I kind of said this little prayer very quietly and said, okay, God, if you want me to do any kind of teaching, let them ask me. The very next weekend, we went to the Snore Chinese restaurant, and they had 2 kids there who needed tutoring. They needed to upgrade their English because they were native Chinese speakers, and the family spoke Chinese, so they couldn't help them in their English. And say, would you tutor my kids? And they had a whole family around them, and they said, we want you to tutor my kids. And I said, okay, there's an answer to prayer. I'll do it. So that's how I got to the area, and that's how I got into tutoring and mentoring.
So since you've been retired, you've been tutoring and mentoring for work.
Yeah, well,
all your writing.
Yeah, you get your retirement, teacher's retirement, and retirement from Social Security, and this just adds a little bit to the
right. Yeah, many people do that.
Pocket change, you know.
Exactly. Well, it's more than that. I think sometimes it can be. Yeah. The combination keeps the quality of living higher for people.
It does.
Okay, but in this time too, then you've been writing books. Tell us about your books. And here, Monica, if you have ones that are favorites of yours, you can encourage her to talk about those.
Well, I think her last one is my favorite, the most recent one. She's working on another one now, but
yeah.
But this one, and I've read some poems that she's brought to writers' workshops on with the new one, and I saw some of these as well.
So the new book is
Waiting for Wings, A Child's Journey. The first poem is about how I got my name. It's the question everybody asks me anyway when they first meet me. So we started with that, and then it has 6 parts. It kind of introduces the family and the fun we had as kids and how I kind of felt like I was left out a lot or just at odds with the way things were. And one of the things that happened in this, by the time I was 11, so we had a flood in Yuba City, 1955. And that kind of started the kind of downward spiraling of the family, where they eventually ended up in divorce by the time I was 18. Mm-hmm. And so the story tells, you know, the odd, fun, quirky things, tells how I got started as a writer, and it also talks about the aftermath of divorce and how kids go through it differently than adults, but by the time you're through, it really affects, you know, them as they go on in life after the parents have split up. And in our case, it took 2 years for that to happen. So there's one big long poem that explains that, and then a few poems after that really bring you up to date on what happened to the family after. So
yes, the way that you're describing it is almost like, though it is a poetry book, it's a little bit of a novella about that period of time in your life.
Well, it kind of is, but a novella is in prose, and mm-hmm. I like little vignettes. My grandmother was a storyteller, and she knew how to tell a story that had a catchphrase at the beginning that made you want to hear the rest, and then a little explanation in the middle that kind of teased you to the end, and then the punchline at the end that made everybody laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I learned to tell stories, and they weren't any longer than any of these poems here. So a novella is it has an overarching story like a novella.
Yeah, that's what I was implying.
That's right.
Yeah, because at the end of it, you have a feel for that period of time in this child's life.
That's right. And you would get a good sense of who I am and you know, where I come from. Yuba City. I want you to taste the sweetness of the peaches and the smell the peach scented air in August when the peaches are all in full form and the smell of the Feather River that was split Yuba City and Marysville that overflowed. That was the river that overflowed to the flood zone. And just recently we had something happening in with the dam up in
Oroville,
and the dam in Oroville was making that whole thing come back. Now, all the stories that I'd written about and thought about and told were just coming back again as the Oroville Dam was at terrible risk of flooding everything downstream,
and it all the way through Sacramento.
Yes, and it was the Oroville Dam that was to harness the Feather River and to keep that from happening. So all of a sudden it was there. It was there. Yeah.
Okay. So
what I found was interesting in her poetry is it took me back to my childhood, even though I didn't grow up in Yuba City, but the way that she describes some of the activities that children have, very universal. And it took me back because it's so tactile and it's so whimsical.
And roller skating and chewing bubble gum and playing four square and tetherball on the playground and getting fascinated with a big back black Underwood typewriter sitting on a white tablecloth and thinking of, you know, how to do this. It's my great aunt's.
Which I still have, by the way.
You do?
I do.
I don't know what happened.
I had that same fascination watching her type on that thing.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was like a passage. The rite of passage would be when I could type on that typewriter. Then I'd be grown up. I knew that.
And the sound of it. You know,
yes.
Has their own unique sound.
And I'd be a writer then because that's what my mother
that's
did.
That's right. Well, my great aunt was the writer, Aunt Ethel, and she brought the typewriter with her when she came to visit. And she was working on Barbarous Mexico, which is a history of Mexico, which is still a history of Mexico. And she also wrote novels and poetry. So she's the one that kind of said, Danella will be a poet someday. She will always write. She may get married. She may have children. She may teach, but she will always write. Mm-hmm. And that's turned out to be a true prophecy. And it's in the book, that story.
And she almost scripted you for that with her blessing.
She did. She really did. It was because I wrote letters. I first started writing by writing letters to my grandmother. And as they got more sophisticated, my grandmother started sending them to my great aunt. And that's when the prophecy came down.
Oh, that's great. That's a beautiful woman's history of how we can enable and encourage each other.
Oh, my grandmother was a great encourager. And Aunt Ethel from above. She was too. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the workshops, because you mentioned, have there been workshops here at Manzanita?
Oh, yes. So we have a pressed flower workshop this coming Sunday, if anybody's interested, that you will come away with a complete masterpiece. Janet Trinkle leads it, and she's a wonderful botanical artist, and she brings all the materials, and you'll come away with a framed work that, you know, she'll guide you through, and it's really fascinating stuff. So that's coming up, and then Lucy Sauna will be presenting her talk on her book, The Cherry Harvest, which is a World War II story about the prisoners of war, the German prisoners of war in Wisconsin, who they were shipped to Wisconsin to help with the labor and the cherry picking. And there's a drama. It's a historical. It's based on fact, but she has the historical, you know, story behind it. But it's a great drama, and that's her first novel. But she's a nonfiction writer as well, and she will be featured at Gold Rush Writers, which is a big conference. It's intimately big.
It's big in effect. Yeah, it's May 5th through 7th. So there's still time if people are interested, whatever level that you happen to be in your writing field.
And these repeat every year too, because
they do. This is the 12th annual.
Yes. So these are annual. So though we probably will not be airing before this particular one.
But yeah, it happens every year.
But it happens every year. Now, within that whole context of the of these incredible workshops that are held in Manzanita, have you had workshops here as well, Daniela? Or where have your workshops been?
Oh, I haven't
been?
Taught them here. I've attended the workshops that are here. excuse me. And I have taught workshops at the Tuolumne Writers Retreat that was for several years that was out there. And
you've attended those, yes?
Yeah, I have. Okay. And taught there.
Okay, some water coming up here from Miss Danella. But so, and how many years did you actually do that?
Well, I started my first workshop, poetry workshops, in 1991, when Poetry Reading at the Panama Hotel came out. And Mount Hermon Writers Conference was where I met Woody Young, who is the publisher with Joy Publishing. And we're doing water here.
Water break.
I started teaching poetry workshops, and I taught workshops on how to write about animals, you know, different kinds of animals, how to write to get out a fruit like a watermelon and write about how that tastes and feels, the senses.
Danella doesn't know it yet, but I was going to enlist her help. We just got a big grant from the Calaveras Community Foundation.
Wow.
For our Voices of Wisdom project. It's a historical project in which we're going to be capturing the voices of our elders. And we're going to Foothill Village and several places, the Senior Center in San Andreas and the Murphy Senior Center. And we're going to have workshops to help people capture the stories. So
oral history.
Oral history, but not so much oral, actually written. We're going to put together a book for them, which will be available at libraries and at the facilities and other places. Capturing these stories that maybe people are shy, they're not writers, but they have stories to tell. And we're going to help them get that story down and shape it. So that's a wonderful, the foundation is a wonderful opportunity for people who have projects. You know, every year money is given out by the foundation to worthwhile and worthy projects in Calaveras County, and that's we're honored to have received that grant.
Oh, and she'd like you to be involved.
Oh, yes, and yeah, she didn't know it yet.
No,
I was going to ask her because she has a great way of leading a workshop that gets people involved. So,
yeah. I like to get them. I taught writing workshops at the Redwood Christian Writers Conference and for about 19 or 20 years, and it only went 21 years, so there's 1 year I missed. And that conference, every year I taught something different. So I'd research whatever it was, aspect of poetry, and then we'd have poetry readings. And I taught at Mount Hermon Writers Conference, at Redwood Chapel, and then at various camp conferences that were fun.
Now, glancing at the blurb that said in the back of the poetry reading at the Panama Hotel by Daniela Kimura, that was published by Joy Publishing, it says here, Readings at the Panama Hotel demonstrates many talents of writer, poet, teacher, and performer.
Yeah.
So you're seen as a performer.
Performance poetry. Also, I wrote drama for a while. And some of them I was in. Some of them were for children to perform. But when I do poetry, that poetry in that book, the poetry reading at the Panama Hotel, they were meant to be read dramatically. So, I just let it go. I dramatized the poem.
And it says that also that you have poems about the Civil War because of a love of history. So you're also
I was a history buff. I was a history major in college,
a
history and political science major, and minor in English at first, and then later majored. So,
and that you take complex subjects such as the work of great artists and composers and make them understandable to even the initiated. And let me just interrupt here for a moment to mention, this is not unusual, is it, those of you who listen to Every Woman's Hour? Every woman that we have on does not do one or two things well. She does 10 things very well. So this is among your 10 here. You can also teach complex subjects such as the work of great artists and composers.
Right. I was fascinated with Mozart when Amadeus came out. And so I began reading all kinds of books on Mozart. And this poem was the result of it. It's called Mozart's Grave. But based on the picture at the end of Amadeus, where it shows the community grave that was yawning in the middle of the cemetery. Nobody knows exactly where he's buried, but it just was a jumping off point for me to spin his life story. And Pizarro was a favorite artist. My grandmother was a painter. I learned to paint oils, both of us. And so Pizarro was like a favorite painter we enjoyed while we were doing our landscapes. And also there was a kid who committed suicide. Unfortunately, nobody could catch him fast enough, but he lost, I think, his sense of, he didn't realize that he had choices. And sometimes people get to that place where they don't see the choices that are in front of them. So Van Gogh became the fascination for me, that I researched his life and realized that he had three choices, and that one of them was to continue living. And so that's what that poem is about. And it's why I read it once in a while for kids or adults, you know. I think it's just important in our age, where too many people are losing their sense that there are choices out there. There's always the choice to live and to find a way. And sometimes if you just talk to somebody, you know, or try to find someone they can talk to, then they can answer that need for someone, you know. So, yeah, that's how I came to those.
In this particular volume, which is Poetry Reading at the Panama Hotel, which explores how to dramatically involve yourself in the presentation of a poem that has more meaning than just...
Oh, there are levels of meaning. Lots of levels of meaning. The Civil War, I was fascinated with that before the Civil War movies came out. And there was a series of books by a guy named Foote. Can't remember his first name, Foote. But before I read those books, I had a book that I picked up out of the library that just talked about the General Lee and the generals at Gettysburg. And so the Gettysburg trilogy came out of that. And I presented at a poetry reading at Patrick's Cafe in Fairfax. And up until that point, they had only restricted you to very small poems. And so, and this was very long, the three poems together. And so one night they said, okay, no restrictions. You know, read the poems you have. And I just finished this. And I got up and read. And when I finished, there's that silence. And then everybody stood up and clapped. It was the first time I ever got a standing ovation.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. But there is no doubt that probably one of the things that impressed them very truly is that I was trying to think back in my years of teaching. I don't remember any women writing poems about the Civil War.
Oh.
You may be one of the few who I've actually heard. Well, them, but there probably are, but it's not... The fact that you picked a subject that is written more by men, I think.
Yeah. I read the story of Elizabeth Blackwell, who was the first female doctor, and she lived during the Civil War. And that impressed me. The Civil War impressed me. And then I was reading I love to read biographies. So I was reading biographies about Mark Twain. And he also lived during and after the Civil War. And I began to just kind of get on the fringes of the story. And, of course, I studied in college as part of the history. But I just was fascinated with the overwhelming cost of that war and the way it changed America.
Well, the way it's still changing America.
Yes.
because definitely those of us who know people in the South and have relatives there are well aware that even our most recent election is more a reflection of the division between the North and the South than people expected were still there after so many hundreds of years.
Yeah, the coast, big cities, and the flyover.
Yeah, exactly. And the flyover is vital.
Yeah.
It's vital to our body politic. We've learned that.
Yes, we have.
Okay, you have more books. Tell us a little bit more about some of your other books.
Well, I wrote a lot of chapbooks.
Have you read her other books, Monica?
I've read through some of them, yeah. I have a collect. I don't have them all.
No.
But I have a couple.
Well, I brought a few. I think I did about 12 of them over time. Alma was a series of poems I wrote after my grandmother passed away. And there are about 23 poems in there. And there happened that a family reunion was coming up. And I had those printed into this little chapbook called Alma. And it's really about the stages of aging. It's how she went through them with grace and humor. And I brought them into the family reunion, and everybody bought them. I just, you know, I sold 30 copies. It was amazing. And so that's one way to sell a book.
Yeah, okay.
Tell your family you got books.
If you have a lot of relatives, the sales go up.
Well, you have mentioned that. Right. I had noticed that people don't say that very often, but you had mentioned the people who are in the audience, and you had added, and of course, family. And that's true because
they don't usually buy your books.
No.
So what I do is I say, I'm giving this to you, but you have to tell 5 people about it.
There you go.
Each one. And I wrote some poems, a little small poetry book, chapbook. It's like a chapter book, you know. This is would be like a chapter out of a book that length, about my dad, called Reverie. And one lady bought up a bunch of them for Christmas and gave them to all of her kids and said, "This is what it was like in World War II with your grandfather." So I had written some of his war stories. Then I did some Sunday school teaching, and nobody got out of my class without being able to do something for their parents. One time it was a reader's theater, and I had them all practice. We had props and stuff, and we did the story of Jeremiah. So that's a reader's theater. When my sons were young enough to have small hands, they were like in the second, third, and fourth grade up to fifth grade, we would go and perform the stories of Daniel. And I had created the puppets. Mm-hmm. I had the
puppets.
Yeah, I did the background of the stage scenery, and we hung it across either a little small puppet thing that they had, or at camp, we did it at camp. We strung a clothesline rope across from one tree to the next, threw a sheet over the top, clipped the scenery right to the front, and I had all my notes behind the sheet taped. And I had 3 kids on this side and another kid on this side and then another one of a friend who I said, okay, you can be the angel. And we did the stories of Daniel, and we had the kids cut out their own puppets and sing a Daniel song and to their parents. And they just had the time of their lives. All week we did art and poetry. Well, some poetry. Meshach and Abednego turned out at one point they had lost Nebuchadnezzar. I think you might know the story where he gets really, really sick. And for 7 years, nobody knows where he is, but they've covered for him. However, Sherlock, Shadrach, and Dr. Watson Abednego try to find King Nebuchadnezzar and what happened to him.
I can't even say all
that's how we do that. Oh, after a while, it's fun. Abednego sounds like to bed we go, right?
Okay, fine.
And then I had
so this is utilizing poetry for teachers who teach Sunday school to make it more fun.
That's
for
right.
Example.
And also
puppet skits for week-long children's programs for family camps.
Yeah, family camps. And
that's when your three sons were little enough that you were working with kids.
Right well, there. When they outgrew the puppets, their hands got bigger. They outgrew the puppets. We couldn't do it anymore for them.
I do some work with puppets, so I love this. This is great. But you did. See, you. I always need the creative person who's going to make the puppets, and you do that too.
Yeah, I made them out of paper mache heads, and then I designed the costumes. And
yeah, I admire that.
Thank you. And then Joseph was a favorite story of mine, and when we had to do an evening children's program from. I was kind of in charge of grades 1 to 5. Can you imagine that stretch? And so I decided that I would be Joseph, and I dressed in a costume that was very much regal, looking like Egyptian, and wore a headgear and did as much Egyptian looking as I could, and told the story of Joseph when he became a slave, and this is all in prose. So this is one of the early prose books, or first prose books.
And it's got color. Joseph is in different colors from the coat of many colors.
Yeah, the title, And so I felt that these were the kind, I upgraded them to adult level, you know, and then I felt that these would go really well for adults as well as any young person who wanted to just read a different take on the story. I have a little different take on Joseph. I think that Joseph was really scared when he got that coat. He wasn't a braggart as they try to portray on the musicals that have been, still going around, actually, some of them plays. I thought that he was terrified. And the reason is because someone who is that high, anyone to get a coat like that would be high ranking. And he was the youngest kid of, next to the youngest kid of 12 brothers. And he was not going to get away with being high-minded. His brothers would take him down a peg, and they did. Many pegs, if you consider being sold into slavery. So telling the story from the first person and dramatizing it and getting the kids involved in, what would it be like, do you think he's scared, or do you think he's, just bragging because he got the coat? There's another little secret in that I put in that came to me, and I thought, this is the thing that sounds right, where the coat came from. And that was something I really, I'm going to not tell that part of the story. I'll let someone else, you have to get the book to figure it out.
Okay, I'm a speed reader. I'm going to go through this. No, this is fascinating because you've also worked in prose and drama as well.
Right, and this is the Burning Hearts is an inspirational poems, you've got that one.
And this one is
Burning Hearts. It's a collection of inspirational poems, and this one. Was just, I had over the years done all these poems, and they were kind of odd pieces here and there. And I thought this would be a perfect collection for them. So that turned into a chapbook. So chapbooks are fun. They're short, easy to read. I've seen people pick one of them up, and they're speed readers. And they would just go like this, and they would read through it like within a couple of minutes, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe I should have made it bigger. But that's what happens.
But you can't read poetry like that.
No.
Yeah.
And I have poetry a published song. Did you know?
No.
No? Well, that's this one.
Okay.
Judith Pella was writing the Warrior Song, and we met at a writer's conference along the coast, a campgrounds conference. And she said, well, you know, I really need to have my character write a song. But she said, it can't be, you know, I could write it in prose, but I couldn't make it into poetry. And I need someone to make it into poetry. So she sent me the pages that it would go before and after. And I would be writing this poem right along with her writing the book. And it was really fun. And then when Bethany House took this book and published it, my lyrics are right in the front. And
She put the notes in the notation.
Phil Bierce did the lyrics, I mean the notes to the song. Mm-hmm. He plays it on guitar. Mm-hmm. And if you ever see him in concert, that's one of the songs he sings.
And I love doing lyrics.
The actual notes or notations in the book. Like
yeah, mm-hmm. that
we'll
is
see
rare.
That too often.
Usually they'll put the lyrics mm-hmm. in the
right.
In fact, that gives me an idea for that lyrics book that we mm-hmm. might be working with mm-hmm. Amateur Arts. Mm-hmm. That this might for the well, I don't know. See, a lot of people can't do notation.
That's right. Yeah, it's
like this.
Oh,
but they
I
can do that. They can do.
There's
chords.
A program that does.
I
that.
Did that. Yeah. I wrote down the notes
yeah.
of the song that he played
mm-hmm.
and figured it out on the piano and,
mm-hmm.
and just wrote the notes.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the notation but I didn't write the song
mm-hmm.
The song. I wrote the
yeah.
lyrics and the notations.
Yeah, I also have lyrics that are still in production and being sung, about 20 of them still being sung, about 30 total. And but I never hear the music.
Oh,
I'll write it to the rhythm, like they say, do something that'll be for say country and western. I'll do a country and western rhythm, and then they go, oh yeah, I know how I can hear the music. And I'm like, good, because I can't. So can you sometimes hear the music too?
I hear the rhythm. I feel the
yeah,
rhythm.
For me, it's the rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that makes three of us, right? There's one other person yeah. I talked to who writes lyrics who said the same thing. They always have to be in collaboration. They cannot write a song.
Mm-hmm.
They write the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You were Gilbert and the Sullivan teams because for them, only one could write the lyrics
yeah.
and the other the music. So that's fun. Yeah, that is fun. That is in her book.
Yeah.
Warrior Song.
So, you know, if you listen and make friends with people and when you go to conferences and things like this just fall in your lap. I went, there was going to be the Loomis, California, very first eggplant festival. They chose, of all the plants, when they went to choose a plant, the eggplant was what was left. And so that's what they chose. And actually, they can grow eggplants in Loomis. And that year, they did the Eggplant Festival Cookbook. Well, it turned out they did one every year after. And I told the lady who was in charge, I told her, what you really need to have is a poem about eggplants. For the festival. And it turned out that I wrote two. And then they had the speaker's platform, and I got to read that poem at the platform. I also was a judge at their eggplant tasting festival.
Okay.
The whole thing was tongue-in-cheek because I knew it was, you know, that was the only choice they had. There was an eggplant decorating. So I had a poem called Eggplant a la Shakespeare. And I would dress my little eggplant head up with a kind of a hat and earrings and white, you know, the white off.
This comes from the puppeteer side of you. I can see this now.
And I think I got third place or something in the eggplant decorating thing. Well, turned out that I named her Yorica, and the and the eggplant festival turned out to be a great place to have to write poetry. So the eggplant the eggplant fricassee got into the first eggplant cookbook, and I think everyone since. It's not a recipe. Well, I could read it if you want. Would you like to hear it? This one.
Yeah, we have time. If it's only a couple of minutes.
Okay. Here. Well, this will be the only.
I see it. Okay.
Eggplant fricassee. No master chef cooks eggplant more ways than I have tried, nor deftly seasoned each new dish with more creative pride. Though broiled, boiled, baked, or flaked, stewed, brewed, or barbecued, roasted, toasted, coddled, or bottled, sautéed, braised, or fricasseed, this lowly ovoid purple herb defies every cooking verb. Though marinated, spiced, or basted, it's the blandest food I ever tasted.
I am so grateful that you read that poem for this interview, because this interview was highlighting your life and how you do these things in your life, and that poem did it because you were dramatic, your sense of humor came through, your willingness to be creative about everything that happens in your life and everything that possibly is going on around you. You obviously see, and a poem comes to your mind about it. Someone once said to me, how do you know, Kat, if you're a writer? And I said, because that's how you think, feel, sing, walk, talk, and dream. You're writing all the time. You can't stop. You can't stop.
Yeah.
It happens all day long.
Right.
If somebody asked me to write a lyric and give me 10 minutes, I could write those lyrics because they're there. They're in your head.
Yeah.
You just move them on out. Not everybody does it in 10 minutes, but the point being that it's there.
Some people write because they can't talk very well. And for me, that was the case when I was young. I could write better than I could talk.
Well, now you can do both very well.
Thank you. If it's written down, that's good. Yeah.
No, even if it's not. Yeah. Take this interview, for example. Oh. You're a natural, miss.
Thank you.
You're a natural. I would like you to tell people how they can contact you, because we're at the last few minutes of our interview. Danella Kimura, how do we contact the poet, author, speaker, workshop, woman, puppeteer, teacher, person?
Okay. My email is Danella, DENELLAK, at mlode.com, MLODE.com. And I have a website, DanellaKimura.com, and it's DENELLAKIM, as in Mary, URA.com. And there's a blog around there somewhere, but that's pretty much how you can reach me.
Okay, is this a phone number that people can reach you at as well?
If
they don't have access to
the computer? If they need to talk to me, it's 209-532-6561.
And the book, Waiting for Wings, your latest book, is available for purchase at Amazon.com. We can't give out the amount of monies for it, but we can.
And Manzanita Arts Emporium.
And at Manzanita Arts Emporium, of course. one would assume.
And Mountain Books in Sonora.
And Danella, you're going to be at the fair.
Yes.
At the author's table in the Professional Art Building. So
at the Jumping Frog Calaveras.
May 18th through the 21st.
Yeah,
so
there are going to be a lot of writers, including Monica, and we're going to sell our books and talk to people who like writing.
So Google Calaveras, Jumping Frog County Fair,
right?
And find out where their booth is, because there's a map that comes up also.
And it's in the Professional Art Building. And
in the Professional Art Building. Mm-hmm. Exciting, happy
interview.
I enjoyed every minute.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, more than happy to have had you. Thank you so much for listening. Those of you listening today to Every Woman's Hour, you can also find this broadcast at everywomanshour.org and at the Historical Society for Amador County. Thank you for listening.
Muffin warm and basket brown, smiling faces gathered round our dinner table.
Wasn't that a fun interview on Every Woman's Hour here on KQBM? I definitely thought so because I felt like I was a very young person hearing all of the work that she had done in life. And why did I feel that way? I kept wondering, and I just figured it out. I honestly think Danella Moore reminds me of the best Girl Scout leaders I was ever with when I was a child, that they were filled with that kind of enthusiasm and care and lovingness and creativity and energy and fun that Danella brings to all of her creative work as she makes a difference in her communities in our mother lode. As I've suggested, you'll be able to hear this broadcast again if you missed it this time around, on Saturday from 11 to 12. And also it will be archived in everywomanshour.org. And I would like you to consider looking through everywomanshour.org website. That's everywomanshour without the apostrophe. Because there the about 140 women who have been interviewed for Every Woman's Hour are archived, most of them under two places. One, the area that they were covering during the interview. For example, if they're a person of fine arts or a writer, they're under fine arts because that's where writing and arts are. And they are also in the archive at the end of everywomanshour.org under their name. So you can find them there. You can also find them in Amador County's Historical Society website, and you can find all of them as a link under the Living History section of the website that has in it all of the oral histories that have been done for Amador County. And we here at Every Woman's Hour on KQBM are the first link on that website. So that's another exciting place to be able to find the interview if you were not able to hear it. Also, join us on Every Woman's Hour on Facebook. That's where I announce the next programs that are going to be on for Every Woman's Hour, showcasing women making a difference in the mother lode. And I'm very excited just to see all the places that Every Woman's Hour is going. Many of the interviews may be used for research and for interviews, for example, for the Amador Ledger Dispatch in the not-so-distant future for that newspaper for Amador County. So we're getting the word out. The women of the mother lode are special. They are the gold of the mother lode. So right now you're hearing also coming on in the background something that's important, which is that you were listening to KQBM. We'll repeat that again shortly. For now, I'm going to say goodbye. Consider donating to KQBM, please. We're working into having our solar panels put up, and we have a $1,000 match going on right now. Check on kqbm.org, click on donate, and help out your favorite radio programs on KQBM. Goodbye for now.
Thank you for listening to Every Woman's Hour.
You are listening to Blue Mountain Radio, KQBM, LP 103.7 FM West Point, KQBM, 90.7 FM San Andreas.